Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday hump day, everybody. It is time for another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 185, and I am your host, Dean Weeks, and with me is Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing fine. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody, especially if you're a florist or a candy maker. This is your day.
Yeah.
But it's been a pretty good week, except there's just been really one down thing, and that's we lost a subscriber on our YouTube channel. The number actually went down one this week. I don't know how to act. Usually I dance a little jig when the number goes up, but what do I do when the number goes down?
Well, we sent Guido out there to find out, track this person down, and drag them out to the middle of the field, and we get to question them.
Yeah, listen up, people. YouTube, Fresh Ink Group channel, subscribe.
Yeah, we're trying to build it, not shrink it. And the more we can build it, the bigger we can build this platform here. And the more, when we have you guys on for guests, you got a bigger reach that way. So it's so all kind of trying to float the high tide floating all the ships.
Yeah. So we published a book this week. It's by Jan Sykes. It's called A Beggar's Bargain, and it's book one in the trilogy series, a Bargainer series. So that's supposed to be out March 12th. It went into pre-sale yesterday so that you can order your copies in advance for a March 12th release. But we're dealing with Amazon. What's the malarkey, Beam?
With Amazon, see, where we publish it through, we do a pre-sale date and then a publishing date. And Amazon tends to, from time to time, grab the publishing date and or the pre-sale date and basically put it out there as order it right now and you can get it in a couple of days. Bottom line is you can't. If you order it right now, it's going to be a pre-order, pre-sale. And Amazon's floating a little reminder that if you use Prime, it'll be there tomorrow or in 2 days or whatever. And it won't be because it doesn't publish until March 12th. And Amazon's the only one that does this. Barnes & Noble, all these other stores, they're good with it. They tell you, hey, this is a pre-order. And, I don't know what Amazon's issue is. Trying to get to the bottom of that is like trying to pull teeth from a hen. It's just, it's difficult. So just keep that in mind when you pre-order it, that if they tell you that it's going to be here in a few days, it's not. It's going to be there by on March 12th or sometime shortly thereafter, because that's when the publication date is.
So check it out. That's A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes. You can also learn more and subscribe to her newsletter if you go to jansykes.com. That's jansykes.com. Yeah, subscribe to her newsletter while you're over there and check out some of her other books as well. But in the meantime, A Beggar's Bargain is now in pre-sale.
Hey, if you want to be part of tonight's show, you got a question or comment for tonight's guest, or you've got a complaint about Amazon doing something to you that ticked you off, here's how you can be part of this program.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right. We published another book this week. Yes, we sit around sometimes with nothing to do except just publish books. This one is The Fourth Ort Chronicle, Keyed, A Lost Civilization by Robert G. Willescroft. The Fourth Ort Chronicle, that means it's the fourth in the Ort Chronicle series. We've got a new commercial for it that you'll hear tonight and a new video for it over on our YouTube channel where we lost a subscriber this week. But check it out. That's Robert G. Willescroft's Fourth Ort Chronicle, Keyed, A Lost Civilization. It's now available, not in pre-sale, but it's just out there. We just got, coming off of the debacle with A Beggar's Bargain, we just said, let's just sell this thing. So get out there, order your copy now, and you can get it in a few days.
Yeah, and it's all three, I believe all three books, all three copies of it should be up now. I think even the Kindle version, because I put that up today. So get over there and grab a copy. These are fine science fiction books by Dr. Willis-Croft.
Yeah, now the commercial that we've made for this is a long one because we get into detail about each of the four books. So at the end of the show today, before our closing, we're going to run that commercial as well. So if you're real interested in that, stick around. Or you can always go over to our YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, where we lost a subscriber this week.
Yeah, keep throwing that out. And if you want to know who this person is, we're going to put them out there in our newsletter, and we're going to out them. I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. But if you want to know about books being released, videos up on our YouTube channel, who's going to be on this show from week to week, we've got a newsletter, and we pack all that stuff in there. Our guy, Sam, he's on top of it. So every week, Sam is packing these newsletters with information, but it's not so packed that it takes up half your day. It's a 10-minute read, and you can have one of these newsletters in your mailbox, and here's how you can sign up for that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
All right, so we're 6 weeks into 2024, and we have already published 7 books here at Fresh Ink Group. We've got Out Now, Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms. That's the sequel to The Calling Dream. And we're going to play the commercial for that. Plus, you can get over there on YouTube and check out the video as well. What
all
else
right,
we got, team?
We've got I Won't Be Your Scapegoat by David Carroll. This is a funny look at some of the misspellings and the faux pas on the internet and on signs in front of restaurants and businesses, and just some funny stuff. I mean, you will laugh out loud. It's that funny.
We also have The Chair 4. That's the fourth book in the Chair series of novels by Robert McKenzie. We have it on good authority. Kathy Ireland likes these books, as well as some famous football players. But The Chair 4, it's a historical fiction, kind of a mix of reality and making it up, with much of the story told from the point of view of a piece of furniture that has traveled through time and lasted hundreds of years and traveled the world. And it's an interesting conceit for a story. And he's four books in. He's already written the fifth one that we're working on putting out later this year. So check out The Chair 4 by Robert McKenzie. What else we got?
And while you're checking that out, check out American Darkness by Stephen Skovicki. These are some really cool and dark poems and some short stories from Stephen Skovicki. We had him on here a few weeks back. If you missed that one, get over to our YouTube channel. And if you're not subscribed, subscribe, sign up.
We got another one. Last month, we also put out The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano. That was released in mid-January. So that's our seventh book that we've put out so far this year. And I got a feeling The Soul Whisperer's Decision might appear way up on our list of bestsellers this week. We'll have to find out in a minute.
Yeah. So as I was saying, Stephen Skovicki was on a few weeks ago, and if you missed that one, that's in our archives, and here's where you can find all of our episodes in the archives.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archive on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and tune in. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right, let's take a quick look at the top 25 print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group so far in the past week or so. I'm not trying to look at all the ebook numbers because we've got 212 sets of retailers out there, and the numbers are just kind of weird to try to compile them. But we got a quick, easy way to look at what's happening with the print bestsellers. So this week, Edge of Smoke, the hardcover edition. Those of you who think novels in hardcover with dust jackets don't sell anymore, We've got a bunch of books on this list that prove that wrong. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Tomes, hardcover edition, is coming in at number 25. And guess what, Beam? The Shearers, Marshall L. Shearer and Marguerite R. Shearer, Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, third edition. These are a pair of husband and wife doctors. He passed away some years ago. She's out there still kicking around, but they're experts at relationships, and they've written the book to help you figure out how to solve any problems with yours. Now, next up on the list, look at that. This thing just went up yesterday, and already at 23, a beggar's bargain. The paperback edition by Jan Sykes is starting to climb that list. So the word's getting out there. She put out her newsletter yesterday, so her fans are starting to scramble. Did you get it yet? Did you get it yet? All right, A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes. Above that, Dave Hooker's Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football's Balls 1998 National Championship. That's the paperback edition. College football season's over, but a lot of Tennessee fans and college football fans still kicking around out there and picking up Dave Hooker's book. Now, Gwen M. Plano, we're expecting her to have several books on the list. Redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision, the paperback edition of her novel, is next up. And then above that, Robert G. Willis-Croft, The Ork Federation, To the Stars, the second Ork Chronicle. As I mentioned earlier, we just published the fourth Ork Chronicle. When that happens, we see a surge in sales of the other Ork Chronicles that are in the series. Those of you who are thinking about writing a series, consider that. That's a big advantage. Try to make them standalone stories if you can so that people can pick up anywhere and get interested in it. And then they go out and they look for other books in the series as well. Robert G. Willis-Croft is enjoying that surge. The next two are Sassy Discovers the AME Church, both the hardcover and paperback edition by B.A. Johnson. That's an illustrated chapter book for kids about the AME Church. And then the next two, again, back-to-back, hardcover and paperback of Robert G. Willis-Croft's Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, the first Ork Chronicle. So you see these Ork Chronicles are flying out now that we've put the fourth one out. Also by Robert G. Willis-Croft, above that, the first of his four Mac McDowell Mission books. These are submarine thrillers, Cold War submarine thrillers. Operation Ivy Bells, A Mac McDowell Mission. Get this, Beam, it's the hardcover edition.
Woo.
It's out there flying. Yeah. Now,
Speaking
of football, Stephen Hargis's Eight Hateful Miles, A Sideline Path to Tennessee's Fiercest Rivalry, is up here in the middle of the top 25 list. This is a book that we just figured would sell like crazy around Southeast Tennessee, where these two, it's a county and a city, and it's rival football teams 8 miles apart, and between them, one of the two tends to take the state championship every year or most years. And he wrote a book about that rivalry with lots of color pictures, behind-the-scenes stories and whatnot. And that thing, 5 years ago now?
Yeah, 5, 6 years, something like that.
Yeah, and that's still a book about a couple of high school football teams is still out there making our top bestseller list. We can't predict these sometimes, but this one we can predict. David Carroll, I Won't Be Your Scapegoat, David Carroll's Homemade, Social Media Blunders, paperback edition. And then above that, Andrew McGregor's back on the list, Beam, How to Paint an American.
That's
a pretty good book, eh, Beam?
It is. It definitely is. This is a story about a guy from Eastern Europe comes to America because he wants to learn what it means to be an American, and he falls Sometimes he falls in with the wrong people and teaches them the wrong things, and that, you know, it all kind of evens out. He meets some good people, and they set him straight.
Yeah.
Grab it.
Now,
good read.
Dr. Najma Thomas's book, As We Remember, A History of the Women's Relief Corps in Beaufort, South Carolina, paperback edition, is now on the list. And above that, Abigail Miriam Hamilton Huguenie's There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation, Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation. That's a hardcover edition, Beam, jumping up here on our list fairly high here. Now, Abigail Huguenie's, she's the former First Lady of Alabama A&M University, and she's put together two more books. We worked on one today, First Ladies of South Carolina State College and First Ladies of Alabama A&M University. These are going to be some cool historical books. Now, you've heard of Gwen M. Plano, right? The Soul Whisperer's Decision, her latest book. And get this, Beam, this is a hardcover edition, has made our top 10 print bestsellers this week. A novel in hardcover.
Hey, Gwen.
Now, what do we got above that? Another hardcover. This one's the Daedalus Files, Seals Winged Insertion Command, SWIC, by Robert G. Willis-Croft. This is four novellas collected into one long story in a single book about men who wear hard shell wing suits and get into combat, learning how to fly with these things. It's pretty cool. Now, we mentioned Operation Ivy Bells earlier. Here it is again, the paperback edition, climbing up our list. And then David Carroll's Volunteer Bama Dog, about Southernisms and what goes on down here in the South. David's an NBC newscaster out of Chattanooga, evening news anchor. And he's got it cold. He grew up in this area. He knows the people. He's got his finger on the pulse, if we're going to use cliches. Above that, Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Towns, which was just published a couple of weeks ago. It's the paperback edition, and he's coming in our number five slot. So Edge of Smoke has made number five, Beam. Carlisle Towns right. should be proud. He's got two more books that we're getting ready to work on here, too. So he's been busy. That gets us to our top four. Three and four are the same book by Mark Herndon, Country Music Hall of Fame drummer who played with Alabama for almost three decades. We published his book in 2016, I believe it is, so 8 years ago, and here it is in our number three and four slots after all this time, hardcover and paperback editions. This is a cool book. I mean, this is Mark telling the story about being a kid, getting into it, how he got his breaks, how he wound up playing in the sold-out arenas all over the world on the biggest stages, and the fame and the fortune and, you know, the hard feelings and the ugly parts of it as well. And he doesn't pull any punches. He tells the story. He takes responsibility for his own mistakes. He doesn't try to dish dirt or trash anybody. He just shares the life. And it's just a fun, fun, interesting read. And Mark's a good guy, too. He's a good friend of ours. We like Mark. That gets us to the top two, Beam. Now, you want to take a guess? I bet there's one about something that goes under the water.
Yeah, Submariner.
Submariner, 30 years of hijinks
and keeping the fleet afloat.
Yep, he's a retired U.S. Navy lieutenant commander, and it's been, I think, over a year now since we published his book, and here it is at number two. Jerry noticed yesterday or the day before, I think, that it was writing number 11 on Amazon. That book just keeps jumping up. It's like a submarine that just keeps surfacing. All right. That's the last one I'm going to try. Number one, Gwen M. Plano. What's the title, Beam?
The Soul Whisperer's Decision.
Yep, the Soul Whisperer's Decision. At number one. The Soul Whisperer's Decision also was an Amazon number one bestseller a couple of weeks ago as well. So Gwen's latest book is doing very well. Looking at the numbers here, she's sold almost double the amount of number two, Submariner, in the past week or so. So congratulations, Gwen Plano, and congratulations to everybody on the list.
Yeah. So those are books that are already out. We've got some other ones coming soon. Pandemonium in Puzzle Town by B.A. Johnson. That'll be out before too long. Journey Through the Lens, World Wildlife Photography. Photographer Angie Birmingham is putting together some of her photos, and it's going to kind of be a teaching book as well, telling you the ways to get good shots and, you know, all that, the ins and outs of photography. We've also got Abigail Huguenies. She wrote There Must Be Something in the Water. She's got another one coming out. It's called The First Ladies of South Carolina State College, and this is a look at all of the women who were there. Their husbands were the presidents, and these were the kind of the power behind the man, so to speak. And she's put together, and it goes way back to the early 20th century. So it goes back pretty far. We also have a book of poems and letters of encouragement from Tina Reist. It's called A Light in the Darkness. And these are just sort of some, Tina is a handicapped woman. She lives in assisted living, and she writes poems and letters that encourage people who need a little encouragement. We've also got a audiobook, and we've been working on this one for a while.
Several years, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, usually our audiobooks, 2 months out and we're done with them. But, you know, Cheryl Carpinello, she knows what she wants. And so we have to keep getting with Ethan and, hey, you know, got to fix this, got to change that, you got to, you know, say this one like that or whatever. But we're getting close to the finish line.
Who's this Ethan you mentioned?
Ethan Drew. He is an actor and a voiceover actor, but he's done films with, like, Christopher Lloyd, Doc Brown.
Yeah,
from,
he's a movie star.
Yeah, and so he's I got an email from him today. He's back to work on the last of these rereads, and hopefully this will be it, and we can put this thing together and get it out there, and you guys can go to Amazon and purchase The King's Ransom, Tales and Legends, The Young Knight series by Cheryl Carpinello, the audiobook. So keep your eyes and ears open to this show, to the newsletter, and we will let you know when that's available, and it'll be worth the wait. So.
All right, so we're going to invite people to call in. The number is 516-453-9902. You can listen to the show right on the phone while you're waiting to be brought into the show. So have a question or a comment for tonight's guest, give us a call, or you can just call and just talk to us. But we're going to meet our guest here in a couple of minutes. We're going to roll a couple of commercials first. This first commercial will be for the new Jan Sykes book. If you're not hip to Jan, pay attention to that and check it out. The second commercial we're going to hear tonight is about a book co-authored by tonight's guest, so pay attention to that too.
A shocking proposal that changes everything. Desperate to honor his father's dying wish, Lakin Martin vows to do whatever it takes to save the family farm. Once the Army discharges him following World War II, Lakin returns to Missouri to find his legacy in shambles and in jeopardy. A foreclosure notice from the bank doubles the threat. He appeals to the local banker for more time, a chance to rebuild, plant, and harvest crops, and time to heal far away from the noise of bombs and gunfire. But the banker firmly denies his request. Now what? Then the banker makes an alternative proposition. Marry his unwanted daughter, Sarah Beth, in exchange for a 2-year extension. Out of options, money, and time, Lakin agrees to the bargain. Now he has 2 years to make a living off the land while he shares his life with a stranger. Read A Beggar's Bargain, Book 1 in the Bargainer series by best-selling author Jan Sykes. Available worldwide from multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes.
Best-selling author Gwen M. Plano presents The Culmination, A New Beginning. The final book in the Contract thriller series. In the first book, co-penned by best-selling author John W. Howell, the Earth is threatened with a catastrophic event, and Heaven's leadership intervenes with extraordinary measures to ensure the survival of the planet. In Book 2, The Choice, a confidential team uncovers a traitorous conspiracy that has as its goal world domination. The pressing question is, who can be trusted and who cannot? The Culmination, A New Beginning brings the Contract thriller trilogy to a close. After an assassination attempt on an Air Force base in Northern California, tensions mount. Heads of state meet to craft a denuclearization agreement. The meetings between these nuclear powers take a murderous turn. A nefarious conspiracy reemerges and leads the characters into the heart of the Middle East, where they encounter the unexpected and find a reason for hope. Grab your copy now of The Culmination, A New Beginning by Gwen M. Plano. Available worldwide in hardcover, paperback, and all major ebook formats. The Culmination is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right, let's meet tonight's guest, John W. Howell. He began his writing as a full-time occupation after an extensive business career. His specialty is thriller novels, but John also writes poetry and short stories. His first book, My Girl, GRL, introduces the exciting adventures of the book's central character, John J. Cannon. The second Cannon novel, His Revenge, continues the tension. The final book in the trilogy, Our Justice, launched in September 2016, concludes the thriller series. John's fourth book, Circumstances of Childhood, launched in October 2017, it tells a different thriller story of riches to rags, football, Wall Street, brotherly love, redemption, and inspiration with a touch of paranormal to keep you riveted. The fifth book is a collaboration with the award-winning author Gwen Plano, which you just heard mentioned in that commercial, The Contract, Heavenly Bodies. Become concerned about the stability of the earth and send two of their own to risk eternal salvation in order to save the planet. The Contract achieved number one status in its genre. John's latest book is, actually there's one after this, John's book Eternal Road, The Final Stop, launched in September 20. In search of their eternal home, Sam and James discover a threat to human existence. They also encounter the Prince of Darkness. The question is, can they save humankind and their eternal souls? All books are available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle editions. Now, John's has another book, The Last Drive, that's come out since this blurb was written, obviously. So we'll make sure we talk to him about that and what he's got coming up next. Welcome to the show, John.
Welcome, John.
Well, thank you, Stephen and Beam.
Yeah.
Great to be here, as usual.
Always glad to have you on. So
always
how about you kind of update our listeners? Some of them may not have heard you the last time you were on. Where are you from? Where have you lived in the past? And what brought you to where you're at now?
Yeah, terrific. Well, I was born and raised in a little town called Detroit, Michigan.
Woo-hoo.
And we're all familiar with Detroit.
I was born there.
You were?
Yeah, I was born in
Detroit.
I
thought you were in,
He's a Michigander.
I moved to Alabama 8 years ago. I was born in Detroit, grew up in the Detroit suburbs, and took my degrees at the University of Michigan. You know, down the road from Michigan State. You know, just down the road from Michigan State.
Yes. Well, speaking of that, I spent 18 years, I guess I would say, at home, and then I went off to Michigan State and spent 4 years there and then never went back. I got hired by a small soap company, Procter & Gamble, so I spent the next 3 years with them. And then there was another company, the makers of Alka-Seltzer, who happened to witness one of my presentations and said, we need you. I said, okay, sounds good. So I spent 22 years with those guys getting to the position of president. Then after that, I went off in consultancies, did several of marketing consultants. And then one of my clients was a small little company called AT&T.
Heard of them.
Yeah. And they said, you know, we really can't have a consultant working on this particular project because it's way too important. So why don't you hire on? I went, that sounds great. And they said, don't forget, we have benefits. And I said, well, okay. Now, as everybody knows in the consulting business, there's a thing called mind, grind, and find. Mind is paying attention to your current client. Find is getting new ones, and grind is actually doing the work. So I had been grinding with AT&T for about 22 months. So all the find and the others kind of went away. So I had no clients really left. So I said, okay, I'll hire them. And benefits, yeah, they were great. Spent the next 15 years with AT&T. When I turned 70 and a half, and my child, last one in the nest, graduated from Baylor University, I said, you know, I think I can afford to retire now.
Ooh.
So that's what I did.
Cool.
70 and a half, picked up notebooks, took every class I could on writing, and said, I want to do what I kind of always wanted to do, and that's do a novel. So I sat down and started My Girl and actually finished three books before the first was published. And that's that story. In between, I went to a little place called Notre Dame University.
Heard of it.
Yeah. And I have to say, I have to congratulate the Big Blue for their finish you know, in the standings this year. But they did a great job.
Yeah, it was a good football year.
Yeah, I don't know where Green finished.
They didn't finish.
Yeah, okay.
They're still on the field.
Yeah.
So every Saturday during football season, I have a problem. I've got undergrad Michigan State, grad Notre Dame. And I kind of sit there and I go, well, I usually go with Notre Dame. I'll be honest, you know. So I started the books. I did a trilogy, the John Cannon trilogy, which you detailed very nicely. Then I moved into Circumstance of Childhood, which is kind of a realistic kind of paranormal thing. I lost a very good friend, and one of the characters in this book is that friend. And he came back, of course, from where he is now to be a character in my book. And yes, he's a ghost in the book. He helps his real good friend get out of some real bad times. And then Gwen and I were sitting around one day, and she said, "Hey, I've got an idea for a story." I said, "You do?" She said, "Yeah." She said, "Let me tell you the idea." And I said, "Geez, that's a great idea." The story starts in, you know, the heavenly bodies and works its way back to Earth with a couple of spirits. And so we sat down and actually wrote the story, and she and I collaborated. I did the thriller aspects because Gwen was she was pretty much into doing storytelling and whatnot. And really, thrillers were pretty much new to her. So I tried to cover that. She covered all the really good plot items, and we worked together. We had not met in person to do the book, by the way.
Hmm.
We did it all virtually. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I guess this would be a good time to kind of bring this. We got a question on
Helen
on Twitter right now from Dr. Helen Burrell. Dealing with that book and working together with Gwen, her question is,
right.
Well, first we got Verwayne Greenhill. He says, "In my best Alfred Hitchcock voice, good evening. It's springtime here in the armpit of Florida where we are having almost warm days rather cold nights, 65 degrees in the day, 38 at night. Remember, if you want your comment," okay, then he tells everybody you got to post this hashtag. But Dr. Helen says, "Dear Mr. Howell, working with another talent, how do you, as different artists, create a work that is seamless once completed? I ask because my experience as an advertising writer, I agreed with your copy supervisor, a committee can't create an exceptional work." And you just pointed out the fact that you and Gwen were never in the same room when you were writing, so... There you go. There's the question. How does that work?
Yeah, Dr. Helen, great question. And in fact, Gwen and I have lectured on the method of putting together a collaboration. The first thing you have to do is understand that each person's talent and interest. In other words, you have to articulate that. You have to talk together. You have to say, "Oh, I like this. I don't like that." You know, this kind of thing. Because the worst thing you can do is ask, I like the term artist, ask an artist to deliver something when their heart isn't in it. It's real difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So once the parties understand where they want to go with the written word, then what you do is you actually design an understanding. In other words, I don't want to call it a contract. It's more or less a mission statement, that kind of thing. To understand who's going to do what. What are some of the rules of engagement? And that's very important. When we have the disagreement, what do we do? Because there's only two of us. I mean, there are two votes. Okay, I outvote you, right? Or you outvote me, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, you have to have a path of resolution for any kind of problem that may come up. And you know, quite honestly, Gwen and I pretty much agreed on most everything. But there were times where we had to kind of drop back and say, okay, what did we say we were going to do if we were in this particular case? And then we said, well, we said we would do this, this, and this. Okay, so we did. The idea of sharing the work, in other words, physically, when you think about, well, how do you do this? Well, you actually take some time, discipline time, you write the work, then you trade it back and forth. And you allow the other to either, you know, change it, add to it, integrate it, or whatever. And you proceed through the book that way, starting with, well, chapter one. I mean, you don't go to the end of the book. You start with chapter one and you just work your way through it. Of course, you have a rough outline. I'm a panster. I think Gwen's a little more disciplined than I am. I think she writes her directions a little more than I do. But I pretty much fly by the seat of my pants. So any given day, I can probably articulate to Gwen, or could, what I'd planned to write that day. And in fact, I probably hadn't thought about it until that very moment of she's saying, well, what are you going to write about today? That's just the way pantsers work. But anyway, the whole thing came together, and if you read any of the reviews on Amazon, the most outstanding point that I take great pride in is that most reviewers feel that this was written by one person.
That's good.
That is, it's as seamless,
yep,
almost as seamless as you can get. And Gwen and I are totally different people. I mean, we're not the same kind of person. Our personalities are different. Our Myers-Briggs are totally different. And so what we were able to do is understand that because we're so different, we have to come together very carefully and be very cautious about the relationship, which we were. It was very rewarding, by the way, because I'm you know, pretty effervescent, boisterous, pain in the butt. Gwen is the most gentle person on the planet. And what she was able to teach me is, you know, there are times when we can step back and not have to win or not have to be the person in control. And that was a great lesson for me. Hope that answered it, Helen.
Yeah, now in a case like that, when the material is going back and forth, how do you know when you're done? How do you know when it's the last person's turn to put his touch on it?
It evolves, Stephen. You just know. I mean, it's like when you're an author and you know you're at the end, you know.
When you know, you know.
You know it's over.
Yeah.
You know, we're there.
That's cool.
Now, we did have some discussions about, okay, next steps after this ending. If we write this particular ending, what is going to happen after? What is the next life for these people? Because we got to know the characters pretty well. And actually, the contract ended a little differently than I wanted it to end. And so it gave rise, which was nice, to two other books for Gwen, which is great. And here are two thrillers that are doing very well, according to what you read earlier in the broadcast,
mm-hmm.
Of a person who really started with her book one as a thriller writer. And now I would say Gwen is a thriller writer.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about it.
She's talked about working with you on that project on this show and how much she learned from the experience and all that, and how much she's carried that knowledge forward in her subsequent books and stuff too. So you weren't just a partner in writing that first one, but you were a contributor in many ways to her writing career and the direction she's going. And she's going very well. She's getting this down pat, isn't she?
Yeah, she really is. And
she's
a great writer. No doubt.
Oh, yeah.
People should buy our books. That's all I'll say.
There you go. People should buy our books. And we're going to roll commercials for two of her books now so we can learn a little bit more about Gwen M. Plano, and then we'll be back talking to our guest, John W. Howell, And after a show last week when the phones rang constantly, so far we don't have any calls this week, 516-453-9902. Be the first one to call in, and I'll tell you what, Fresh Ink Group will buy you a copy of John's latest ebook.
Yeah.
You're the first caller.
Sarah Jameson, a nurse at County Central Hospital, survives an accident that kills her two young children. While comatose, she travels into the heavenly realm where she visits with her precious little ones. She is given a choice, return to her husband, Jack, or remain with her children in their celestial home. Jack was not in the fated automobile. Though he heard the crash and ran to help, there was nothing he could do. He suffers the loss of his children, fears the potential demise of his wife, and wonders about his own sanity. His struggle with PTSD from his military years has returned, and at times he cannot distinguish between the present and the past. An accident tragically changed the lives of this young family, but out of sorrow emerges unexpected blessings. You'll be deeply moved by Gwen M. Plano's new novel, The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano.
Family secrets can be deadly. When Lisa visits her parents one fateful Saturday morning, she hugs her father and takes her suitcase to her childhood bedroom. The doorbell rings. And 1 minute later, her father lies dead on the floor, three bullets to the chest. The death of Eric Holmes sends shockwaves throughout the quiet neighborhood. But for the Holmes family, it's devastating. In this fast-paced psychological thriller, Lisa and her brother embark on a quest to solve the mystery of their father's murder. The journey takes them into a secret world where nothing is as it seems. Once the puzzle pieces begin to coalesce, they realize that their father had multiple lives. As the facts unravel, the siblings discover the true meaning of redemption. Gwen M. Plano's Redemption is available worldwide in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats. Published proudly by Fresh Ink Group. Redemption by Gwen M. Plano.
All right. We are talking to John W. Howell, the author of many, many books. John, let's tackle your first book, My Girl. Tell us what's this about. How did it come about, and what's the story there?
Yeah, this is a story of a lawyer. I picked a lawyer because most people can't identify with a lawyer.
Hmm.
He's a very good lawyer, has a lot of money, takes a vacation and decides he really wants to retire. He wants to get away. So he buys a boat, and unfortunately the boat has been earmarked by some terrorists to be used as a bomb guided into New York Harbor to explode against the hull of the ship of the Annapolis midshipman. Of course, he didn't know that. The name of the boat is My Girl, M-Y. G-R-L. So the story actually is about this lawyer who has, you know, no Arnold Schwarzenegger abilities at all, how he is going to thwart this plot once he learns of it.
All right. Where'd you get the idea for that?
That was interesting. My dad was a naval aviator, and he served on the Lexington during World War II, and the Lexington is parked in Corpus Christi, and I lived at the time in Port Aransas, which is like 12 miles away from Corpus Christi, and my sister and I both visited the boat, and what we wanted to do is determine and get a feel for how our dad wandered around this particular ship and you know, what some of his duties were. And, he was with the Bombing Group 9, which is a fairly productive group, and he was the group navigator, which meant he had to get the bombers to the target and then back to the ship, knowing that the ship is moving, of course. So there has to be an awful lot of engineering done. Anyway, I was standing on the flight deck of the Lexington, and it's kind of a large, very large boat. And I looked around, and all the anti-aircraft emplacements had been removed. In other words, there were no 40 caliber guns there at all.
Oh, no fun.
No fun. And so it occurred to me, what would happen if a terrorist decided to take something like this? This is a treasure of the U.S., one of its treasures, and destroy it. I mean, there's no defense at all, none. So I kind of thought about it and went home, thought about it some more. I used the Lexington as a mental point. I never used it in the book. I substituted the Annapolis Midshipman as the national treasure, which I think no one would argue with me on that. And at their cruise, they had a summer cruise, they would be relatively defenseless as well. So that's how the story started. I just I had those two concepts: national treasure, undefended, what would a person or what would a group do to stop whatever was going on?
Now your lawyer, John. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was saying the scope of the story goes all the way from Port Aransas, because I use that as a locale, all the way to New York Harbor. Big scope, big villains, horrendous people, and the same villains in the book too. In fact, the way I titled the trilogy was My Girl, My, His Revenge, His, Our Justice. So I played
that's cool.
Words a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I started to ask about the lawyer, John J. Cannon, your main character there. Where does he come from? I mean, is he based on some people you know? How did you develop that character? Tell us a little more about him.
He was based in San Francisco, which is a place I've lived. And he is not representative of anybody. There's a little bit of a divorce lawyer in him that I had employed at one time, but very, very little. And he was just kind of a character. I think almost a character that, If I had met a lawyer, I wished he would be like this guy. So that's the way I kind of invented him. He isn't reflective of anybody. Of course, San Francisco I used extensively in all three books because of my knowledge of that area, the Embarcadero, and especially, and just very colorful. I just loved that area when I lived there.
Yeah.
And so, I use that extensively. And in the end, of course, John gets a love interest. And in the end, John does prevail after three books. He finally conquers the antagonist. Kind of torturous for poor John. But the books are written in first person, present tense. Challenge there, of course, is to write a book in first person without using the pronoun I. Very difficult.
Yeah.
And because I've read first person books that you just want to toss it out the window, you know, too many I's in there.
Yeah, I hear that.
So that's another thing that comes out of reviews. People can't believe that I use first person reason I did on those books was to put the reader right in the center of the action. In other words, nothing can happen off stage. Everything happens in front of the reader. Because you're with the protagonist.
Yeah,
you're sitting beside him.
There's no hindsight in those kinds of stories either. You've got to take it as it comes. You don't get to know what's going to happen or have any experience. Take it as it comes.
Right, and backstory is very limited. Because you're with the guy. I mean, the first scene opens with him. And then, you know, from that point on, there's no use explaining anything because he's right there. Mm-hmm. And I found that an exciting way to write.
Yeah.
Very, very pleasing for me. A little difficult, but, and there's a lot of people that just absolutely don't like first person or present tense. They find it kind of unnerving.
Mm.
So I put both together. I mean, if you want to unnerve somebody, go ahead.
Let's segue then into his revenge. What do we have here with John J. Cannon?
Well, he is obviously trying to stay out of the way. His revenge pretty much has the antagonist trying to eliminate him. Because what happened in the first book is John pretty much embarrassed this very powerful terrorist leader. I mean, he embarrassed him by stopping the carnage that was going to take place. So the antagonist then wanted John to help him get close, because John's a hero now. Let's not forget that. He gets a medal. He's going to go in front of Congress. He's going to do all this stuff. And so the antagonist figures there's only one guy that can get next to the president without being questioned, and that probably is John Cannon. But John won't do what we want him to do, so what we'll probably do is get a stand-in. So the whole story really is how this whole stand-in thing is going to work. I also am very cruel. I put a bullet through the head of the girlfriend of John.
Oh, nice guy.
Yeah. Well, on the cover, there's a graphic where, there's a target on a girl's head. So, but it was necessary at the time. But the end result is that, it isn't revenge. I mean, the revenge is almost complete. John has to regroup. And then our justice is both he and his girl get back at the antagonist and pretty much take care of him.
A satisfying conclusion. And that's not going to be extended, right? That's a trilogy and done?
No, the trilogy is done. Yeah. It would have been nice to do a series, John Cannon series. But I'll tell you what, I don't know, maybe it's not atypical, but you get a little tired of one personality sometimes. At least I do. So I went off and on Circumstances of Childhood, created an entirely different personality, which was a football star, Wall Street maven, very successful guy, and real happy and all kinds of things. And it was a little different from the three books. And I just wanted to go a different direction. And as I say, I also lost a friend. And what happened in that situation was the paranormal aspect became very, very appealing, because it was almost as if I didn't really lose him. And I built him into the book, and it was as if he was still with me. Till the end of the book, of course. I mean, that's my writing history. The Eternal Road is a complete and total different direction, of course. I think we talked about a little bit about when in my book.
The contract, yeah.
Yeah. But that one, in a brief summary, is as the trailer indicates, here are two people that signed a contract up in heaven, and they have no knowledge that they did so. In fact, they don't even know each other when they come to Earth. So if you kind of put your head around that, how did they meet? How did they get to know each other? What happened? And did they ever realize they had a contract? Well, they did. When everything was resolved, they were back in heaven. They finally realized that they had bet their soul on coming down to Earth to help humans, which is a risky thing in the anytime, right?
Yeah, I try not to make that bet myself.
Yeah, no, I stay away from it too.
Yeah.
Don't slide the chips over here. I'm not taking the bet. But that's what they did, and that's sort of the essence of the beauty of those two people, that they were willing to put themselves on the line for that. And Eternal Road is a complete it's sort of a paranormal thriller. It has been called religious fiction. In fact, it won a prize at the Indy, show for religious fiction. But it was interesting because go ahead, Pete.
As we say, how about we hold that off until after the commercials? We're up against a break, so we're going to do the commercials. We're going to come back and talk about Eternal Road and The Last Drive.
What's next? Okay.
Yeah. All right, we are talking with author John W. Howell, and the phone lines are still open, people. Come on, pick up them phones.
And nobody called. What was the deal last week? Why was it such a great week last week?
I don't know. We went 90 minutes, and it was back-to-back calls.
Yeah.
Must have been the talent. Must have been the offer. Of course.
Yeah. 516-453-9902. 516-453-9902. Pick up your phone. You could be a winner, too. All right. We will be right back after this.
In an innocent 1958 American suburb, Shelley doesn't know the power of a kiss or how it will change her entire life. At 16 years old, she falls in love with a young man. One night, just one night, they go too far. Months later, pregnant and shamed, Shelley's parents banish her. Alone and heavily pregnant, circumstances force Shelley to cross the country in an old pickup. A mistaken turn leaves her lost in a forest amidst a severe snowstorm and in labor. In the dark of night, Shelley must get help for her newborn baby before they both perish. A light in the distance gives her the slimmest glimmer of hope. After Shelley wraps the infant in her father's old jacket, she trudges through the snow to a lighthouse keeper's cottage. Snowhouse buries the squat stone building. Will Shelley find shelter, or is it the beginning of the end? Read The Gift by Gwen M. Plano, published by Fresh Ink Group, exclusively on Amazon Kindle.
When guilt-ridden Mia checks into a suicide hotel but can't go through with a final act, vengeful ghosts gather to torment her. Set in the near future, the post-war world is in turmoil. Mia Hawthorne suffers an emotional breakdown following the death of her wife and loses everything to a corrupt government. In an ironic twist of fate, the government's suicide department, The Last Sanctuary, allocates a desperate and destitute Mia to the very hotel and family heirloom which she has so recently lost. On her first day at the Lighthouse Inn, beset with painful memories, doubts and questions, Mia finds herself coming face to face with angry ghosts who gather to goad and torment her. Lost and alone, can Mia find enough strength and purpose to avoid her final, frightful fate? Read The Room at the End, Harbor Point Series Book 8 by best-selling author Harmony Kent, exclusively on Amazon Kindle.
A small rural community in the Lowcountry along Ocean Highway Green Pine, South Carolina, has long lacked cultural and educational opportunities for its young people's future success. Many have gone on to serve in the highest levels of education, government, public service, elected office, business, and medicine. With so much success against the odds, surely there must be something in the water. Abigail Hugeni chronicles the impact just 42 of Green Pond's children have gone on to make in the world. All full-color editions include photos from around town and local translations of down-home sayings. These inspirational stories prove that, regardless of one's background, we can all find our own path toward greatness. An excellent reference, keepsake, gift, and addition to every library. There Must Be Something in the Water, anthology of the fourth generation, descendants of Green Pond, after the emancipation, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right. We are talking to author John W. Howell. Telephones still are open, 516-453-9902.
All right, John, you were telling us about Eternal Road, which is your penultimate published book, and then you're going to tell us about The Last Drive, your latest book.
Yeah, Eternal Road was kind of a different type of story. It's a story of two kids who were really friends in grade school, and actually, as we learn, loved each other in grade school. Unfortunately, the girl was taken and did not survive. And the boy went on to, finish college and all that. Then at one point, he's driving. He has a 1956 Oldsmobile, by the way. And that becomes a center part of the story as well.
That's the car on the
driving.
Cover?
Yeah, car on the cover. Right?
Oh, beautiful car.
And he sees a hitchhiker off in the distance, and he can't tell if it's a male or a female. And he's toying with himself. You know, he's got this long ride to his first job. And he decides, well, what the heck? I can pick somebody up. I mean, you know, they're not going to knife me or anything. And then he discovers as he gets closer that there's a female. And he's going, oh, this could turn out to be okay, you know. So he does pick her up. And then he comes to realize, because she pretty much tells him, that he did not know it, but he fell asleep. And he, too, is dead.
Wow.
Yeah, so these two then have the job of finding his eternal home. And in my, you know, author kind of world, once you die, you get to choose your eternal home. And once you die, someone you know very well or loved helps you find that home. So that, notwithstanding any religious things, that's just how my author world goes. So the book works that way. Now, on the road, of course, are various and sundry things that occur because the guy is given a choice, you know, what do you want to do? So he says, well, I don't know. I thought I wanted to be a newspaper man someday, and I'd like to maybe go to Old Tombstone, you know, and take a look at the tombstone epitaph. So sure enough, they show up, and the car is the mode of transportation. The car will take them wherever they want to go.
Wow.
So a series of stops, run-ins with the antagonist. In this case, is the, probably the antagonist, Lucifer.
Mm.
Tends to get them a little bit sideways on their ultimate destination. Lucifer's motivation is to try to get their souls, because these two people are chosen. They're already angels. And if he can get them to turn, in other words, if it's like, you know, a political person getting someone to come to the other party, it would be a great feather in his cap. So he tries to intimidate them by sending them to places where they really don't want to go. One of the humorous places was they show up at Wimbledon. And here James is the has been declared the winner of the Wimbledon tournament. He doesn't even know how to hold a racket. So he's standing out there in the awards ceremony, and he doesn't know anything. Doesn't know what to say and what to do. So they get out of that. But anyway, so there are a series of things, and the eventuality is that they do find their eternal home. So the next book, The Last Drive, is the second book in the series. And Lucifer turns the heat on quite a bit in the second book. The blurb indicates that he sends them to Auschwitz. He sends them to, puts them on the Titanic. And one of the rules of the whole series that these two folks have to abide by is they can't alter the past, because it will make a time tear in the future. In other words, if they save people on the Titanic, what would happen to all the generations of folks after that, that they, that, you know, the parents had died on the Titanic, but now these two save them? Well, what happens? How does the time continuum continue in that direction? So one of the cardinal sins that they have is not to disrupt the time continuum. So they're very, very limited in what they can do under severe situations. In other words, they land in Hiroshima, and they land at 30 minutes until 9:05 or whenever the bomb went off. And what possibly could they do in that situation? Could they warn people? Could they find a place to hide? Could they do anything? The answer, obviously, is there isn't really much they can do. So if you put yourself in that situation and you were a godly person like these two are, how would you feel knowing that there's absolutely nothing you can do and that all these people are going to die? Or on the Titanic, all these people, these little children, are all going to drown. And in reality, if you give up your soul, the Lucifer character will tell you they'll be saved. And the time continuum will be fixed. You know, everything will be fine. It's pretty tempting.
Mm.
So that's why he does that to them constantly. So to the current work in progress, it's the third book in the series. Not sure there's going to be any more. Of course, as I said, I'm a pamster, and there wasn't really going to be a second.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah,
funny, right? A bunch of people say, hey, what happened? You know, how come, when's the next one coming out? You know, we're all invested in these characters. You go, well, yeah, okay, I'll do another one. So the third one is pretty much like that as well. And the third one is the first two, we start off with the two characters, the two protagonists. In this one, we really start off in a different place. We start off in Tombstone, Arizona. Wyatt and all the guys are there. And we figure out that one of the characters that is there is really from the future. and he doesn't even know it. So it gets a little complicated because the two protagonists have to show up and kind of guide him back to where he was. And where he is, they guide him to a point. He's a world-renowned race driver, world cup holder. And they guide him to the point where his car leaves the road and does about a triple flip. And he looks at the car sitting there steaming, and he says, "That's me, isn't it?" And I said, "Yep." So we go on from there. Lucifer's
wow.
still there harassing these guys. But it's kind of interesting. Gwen Plano, we keep mentioning her. She turned me on to a guy named John Davis. It's kind of interesting. And John Davis has a theory that evil, real deep evil, isn't somebody sitting on your shoulder with a pitchfork, or temptation isn't somebody sitting on your shoulder with a pitchfork. It isn't some external entity like Lucifer, like an entity I've created in my book. It's really within each of us.
Hmm.
In other words, evil is for each of us to determine whether we're going to succumb to temptation or not. It isn't, somebody in a red suit. It's actually
red suit, Santa Claus.
So that
Santa's
yeah.
evil.
No, Santa Claus.
I like a thriller that makes you think like that and get into the moral dilemmas and have to try to sort out what your motives are and how it all comes together.
Right. Well, I've had to lay a string in run a string through the book, which starts in the beginning. And so in the end, these two characters are going to really understand what they've been doing for the last two books. Because they have pretty much been reacting to Lucifer. And what they're going to truly understand is what really went on, which will be their reward for being good. Because they never give up their soul, ever.
Wow.
So that's it. That's
When can we expect this third book in the series?
I think about September. I've got to get it to the editor. And once there, then I'll have to, keep working it as you do.
Yeah.
Do you want to
shout out the editor? We like shout outs.
Harmony Kent is my editor.
Oh.
Every book.
Every
book. You
Go
just
Harmony,
did a
yeah.
Yeah, you did a commercial with her book.
Yeah.
She's marvelous. Absolutely marvelous. And I feel guilty when I send my manuscript to her because I know how hard she works.
She does work hard.
And I figure I could have worked a little bit harder and she wouldn't have to work as hard.
So she's going to earn that quid, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and she has. She's sent, we've got seven books out there. She's done each one of them. So that process will take a little while, but I should have this thing wrapped at least in my editing process done by June. So anytime after that, and I say September because I'm going to give Harmony plenty of time.
Yeah. Now, listeners, pay attention. When John's third book in this series comes out, we'll definitely talk about it on the show, feature it in the newsletter, maybe even have John come back on the show. But we're definitely excited about seeing what happens in that series. Maybe it'll end after three. Maybe it'll go to four or five. You never know. He's a panther.
You never know.
Yeah. So, John, do you have any advice for other authors out there? I know we've asked you this on the show before, and you always have some good ideas.
Yeah, I came across, I have standard advice that I give, like, don't listen to anybody, just keep writing. Don't show anybody your work until you're done, with the first draft. But I did run across another thing that kind of came to me. The guy asked me, he said, do you take all the advice people offer you?
Hmm.
And I went, let me think about that. I said, no, that's impossible.
Yeah.
Because there'll be somebody who'll say, well, you should edit as you write. Or somebody else will say, well, don't edit, until you're done. And another person will say, you got to watch your punctuation. And I said, no, you basically can't listen to every bit of advice. What you can listen to is advice that makes sense to you. In other words, when somebody says you ought to sit in the chair until you finish what you want to accomplish that day, that seems to make sense. At least it does to me.
Yeah.
And it probably would to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
If another guy says, oh, I'll only work 10 minutes, that doesn't make sense
to
me, because it'll take you half a decade to finish anything. So I kind of believe that when people are offering advice to authors, when you get beyond the real hardcore mechanics, and I call mechanics, like, I really believe in not showing your work to people until it's done, because you can always go back and correct it. You can't recover from criticism that is seemingly well placed, but really hurtful. It's very hard to recover from it. Even if you don't think it's legitimate, it's still hard to recover.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep writing, and then show people your work, and then cry and moan because they're criticizing you. Who cares? You got a manuscript done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and the other piece that I have is write every single day. Every day of the week, I get a holiday. No. And even if it's 200 words or a paragraph, it doesn't matter.
Keep the momentum.
The point is you keep the momentum and you stay connected with your work, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Could be poetry, could be, whatever.
Yeah. Some good advice. John, how can people contact you? How can they find you out there in the vast internet world?
It's real easy. They can go to https://johnwhowell.com. The important part is johnwhowell.com. And I'm there 6 days a week with my blog. And everything that I own is there as well.
Do you have any social media handles where people can find you? Follow you?
All those, yes. Yeah.
Subscribe? Okay.
Yeah, I've got Twitter is at Howell Wave. That's H-O-W-E-L-L. Wave, W-A-V-E.
At Howell Wave. All right.
At Howell Wave.
At Howell Wave. All right.
At Howell Wave.
Our guest has been John W. Howell. His latest two books, the first two books in his series, Eternal Road and The Last Drive, and we're looking for book three coming out pretty soon. We've enjoyed having you on the show, John. Thanks for being a guest.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I want to thank both of you for inviting me. Sorry about those phone calls.
Yeah, well... We'll definitely be talking to you again when that third book comes out. Now, listeners, next week we're going to have Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon. They're into graphic storytelling, comic books, graphic novels, that kind of stuff. And then after that,
we've got a rerun. We will be off in 2 weeks, and that rerun is going to be a repeat with Jenny Wong, the author of Girl Wears Those Shoes. And after that, we will have...
After that, Joe Sochak, who's an author I have never met and know very little about. That's one of the fun things about these shows. Beam will book somebody, and it'll be like, hey, what's this? And we get to meet new people and learn about new books, and that's just pretty cool. So Sochak, Joe Sochak, will be on. And after that, somebody who's an old friend of Freshing Group in the show...
That is Jan Sykes. fresh off of her book will have been released the day before that episode. So tune in, and we're going to find out all about this new book that Jan's got put together, and we will have fun with that. And after that...
Well, now, that Jan Sykes show, one of the cool things about it is we're going to get a call from John W. Howell during that show. So he'll have a question or a comment for Jan as well. And then the week after that, Vincent Panettiere, another author that I'm not very familiar with. He's into graphic work. Is that right, Bean?
I believe he is. I believe he's one of the graphic, but I believe he's got a bunch of stuff. This guy here, he's been, if he's the one I'm thinking, he's an agent, he's screenwriter, books, all kinds of cool stuff. These guys are new to me, as they're going to be new to you, the listening audience, and to Steven here. And I've got other ones that I'm booking too. They come to us and hey, can we be on the show? And I check them out. Okay, yeah, we'll have this one on. So
yeah. All right. Again, our guest has been John W. Howell, author of a whole bunch of cool books, including his latest two, Eternal Road and The Last Drive. Again, John, thanks for being on the show. It was a hoot.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. I really appreciate
it. All right. We do have two more commercials we're going to play on the way out, including that Orc Chronicles one that we promised earlier. So it's been fun, everybody. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
In the Pruitt-Igoe slums of St. Louis in the 1960s, a heroin addict mother breaks her son's dolls and screams, "You are not a girl." However, no one can convince Stephanie to live as Stephen. Her mother pimps her out to a man who rapes and takes pictures of her. After finding her mother brutally murdered, she is placed in Christian foster care, where they also try to convince her to accept being male. Her mother's lover is sentenced to life in prison for the murder. Author of widely praised The Calling Dream, Carlisle Toms brings back famed televangelist Pastor Ronald Dennison in this unflinching sequel, Edge of Smoke. Dennison sets up a trust that allows a compassionate old neighbor to adopt Stephanie out of foster care. Still, she is violently bullied at school for identifying as female. The trust pays for transition surgery at 18, and she begins to live fully as a woman. Frightened by men, she remains a virgin until she falls in love with Jordan. But she runs into the man who abused her and remembers her childhood pledge to kill him. Will her lust for murdering the man who brutalized her as a child cause her to lose the man she loves? Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, The Calling Dream, and now, Edge of Smoke, can be found anywhere and shipped everywhere in jacketed hardcover and softcover editions, or downloaded in all ebook formats. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms.
You're listening to The Voice of Indy.
Discover interstellar drama with Robert G. Willis Croft's science fiction series, The Oort Chronicles. In the first chronicle, Icicle, a tensor matrix, Braxton Thorpe has discovered a threat to the entire solar system, but he has a problem. He's dead. Frozen at death, he awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once and are coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of the threat and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? In the second Oort Chronicle, The Oort Federation to the Stars, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidor Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. Phoenix terraforms Mars for more living space, but the Mars Reds prove formidable resistors. In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light-years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? In the third Oort Chronicle, Ran, a civilization in hiding, humans commence a voyage of discovery to the cold spot in the cosmic microwave background. Their first stop is the planet Arcan, orbiting Ran in the constellation Eridanus, where they discover an incipient spacefaring Saurian civilization that has hidden itself from the rest of the galaxy. Arcan has three ruling nations, a fascist dictatorship, a primitive theocracy, and a free market republic. The humans are drawn into a rebellion to overthrow the fascist tyrant, and then help thwart the theocratic prophet's ambitions to subjugate Arcan. Told entirely from the Arcan perspective, Ran centers on the human aliens' desire to integrate Arcans into their growing Oort Federation. In the fourth Oort Chronicle, Cade, a lost civilization, Starship Andromeda stops at the Cade Triple Star System on its voyage of discovery and stumbles on a derelict Dyson sphere. The starship is attacked by microbots, scavenging one part of the sphere to repair another. They map the sphere and discover several primitive races inside: humanoid, feline, and Saurian. The explorers discover that the Dyson sphere's star is about to produce a super flare that could destroy all life and even the sphere itself. The explorers mount a major rescue effort to save the uploads and sapient races. Robert G. Williscroft's series, The Oort Chronicles, is available in jacketed hardcovers, softcovers, and all ebook formats, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Robert G. Williscroft's The Oort Chronicles!
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.